Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you right when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a bacon. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes.
Well, friends, here we are. It's Thursday afternoon, and that means it's time for In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Bajarski, joining us by phone from Juneau to answer your questions about gardening and to share some expertise about what's the best thing we can be doing in our gardens this time of year. But before we dive in, we want to say thank you to the Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. They have season and annuals to fill out the garden. New shipment arrived of organic black gold, compost perlite, and bales of potting mix. They welcome visitors and offer delivery. The Flower Farm, 772-3464. They're out there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing. Okie dokie. We've got Ed Bajarski on the phone with us. You're reading us loud and clear, Ed?
I'm hearing you clearly, Oren.
All right, excellent. Well, tell us, how's the week been?
Well, pretty good. The usual ups and downs of rain and sunshine, I guess, which is making everything grow, weeds and plants and all. So that's good. And, well, I'm just thinking about what we talked about last week. I'm sitting here on a bucket beside my gooseberry bush, and sure enough, there's some little pestiferous critters on it. Got to work on get out my soap spray, and I had other reports on locally on them. So our timing is right on. But otherwise, we're starting to do some thinning, and certainly doing some deadheading to keep our plants, and whether that be flowers or vegetables or otherwise, growing well, growing healthily. And hopefully going to produce us more, either more flowers, more fruits, more whatever, or more carrots.
Yes, indeed. So can you give listeners a little overview about deadheading and what you're going to be looking for this week in the garden?
So for those of us who are not saving seeds, and some of that I have on my early blooming primroses like the denticulatas and Primula rosea, those are, I am going to save seeds. So I've been actually watching the seed pods very carefully to see when they are ripe and ready to pick. But if you don't want to save seeds and grow a whole bunch more, thousands and thousands of them, then you should deadhead those, because otherwise the plant is putting energy into trying to make seeds. And whether this be perennials, so we're planning ahead really for next year, or whether that's annuals that we want to keep blooming through the season, we can hope. Removing those flowers will stimulate the plant, at least for the annuals at least, to flower some more. And in the hopes of making seeds to propagate, that's how they do it.
Okay, so it's just essentially keeping the energy of the plant going towards the directions that we actually want it to be rather than seed production.
Exactly. And, you know, right now, so I'm looking around here, I've got, well, we've got rhododendrons are blooming, and we have lilacs are blooming. So, again, all of those, and, well, I see some iris here, and, I mean, all sorts of stuff. And this even applies to your daffodils, which should be all done, and tulips, which pretty much are done also. All of those will benefit by removing those developing seed pods because of that. And something, well, again, just kind of starting, another one, are the fuchsias, our hanging basket fuchsias that we want to remove for the same reason, even though, well, you can eat fuchsia berries, but since you don't know what kind of fertilizer and or possibly pesticides somebody else might have used to grow them, unless you're overwintering your own, you probably don't want to be eating those berries from your fuchsia. So pinch them off.
Okay. That's good advice, definitely. Anything else you're looking for in the garden as far as deadheading things going to seed this time of year?
Well, that is a few of them. I mean, one that you may or may not deadhead, so I'm looking also at my chives. Now, the chives are in bloom now, and chive flowers are really an attractant for bees, bumblebees, honeybees, and all of that, and among other things. So on the one hand, you might want to remove them because those stems are taking energy from the plant, you know, but if you've got lots of chives that you can just keep clipping away on them carefully, you'll still have plenty for eating, tossing in your salads, tossing in with your potatoes or other assorted dishes, using for some seasonings. So then again, we're kind of balancing some of these and allowing them to flower. Certainly chives will produce lots of seeds too. So maybe let them flower to enjoy that and let the bees enjoy it, and then remove those, basically give them a haircut, and then you'll have a lot more green stuff. Normally you won't get a second flowering from your chives, however, out of that. The other one that you might want to leave them on or to harvest flowers and all, and of course if they're edible flowers, might be things like the oregano or rosemary or thyme. So again, when those flower, that's perfect to toss those into salads also. Pinch them off, clip them off, and toss them in your salads for eating. Still another weird one, I mean, it's kind of one leads to the next, is the daylilies. So daylily flowers, daylily buds, even before they flower, are edible. Daylily flowers are edible. But even the daylilies the day after, when they start to shrivel, can be harvested, dried, and used for soup thickening and stuff. And you can have actually seen them for sale in Chinese and Japanese markets in places. So that's one more way to use them, as well as remove them before they go to seed.
Gotcha. Wow. Okay, that's really interesting. Daylilies.
Yeah, you can taste them, you can snap. Of course, the problem is if you snap off the buds, that means you don't get flowers from them. But they can be eaten raw, and some of them are kind of a little more acrid, some a little on the bitter side, some of them just kind of crispy. They're usually better if you just briefly saute them or stir fry with them to add a little flavor and to thicken stuff up. So just a little something different to try. I think I mentioned maybe a couple of weeks back about the one lady who had done the edible flower talk up here for the virtual conference.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for just a few more blossoms on my lilacs to try that in, to make a lilac-flavored lemonade here as something new and different.
Wow. Wow, that is a good reminder, too, that, you know, those videos from the Gardeners Conference, those are still up, right? The recordings from the presentations?
They are, yep. They're on the website. They're available there for probably, we're told, well, they're on there because they're actually hosted on the university website. There may be a limit as far as how long they will be there, you know, but it may be 6 months to a year, roughly, is what we've been told. So, yeah, do take a look to view those.
Right.
Then I suppose if we're looking at some more of these flower buds that are coming very, very soon to a garden near you, the garlic scapes, I'm noticing on my own, a few of them are big enough that they may go into some pasta sauce tonight, just the very first one.
Wow.
So, again, that's normally we recommend removing them anyway to eat. So that our garlic bulbs will get bigger. Well, this is going to be the very first ones, and again, it'll be some nice, fresh, I guess they call it brightly flavored garlic to toss into the sauce or even finely chop into salads or other stuff too.
Very nice. Okay, so if there were any garlic growers out there who thought, well, does my plant need these scapes? Is it good for the bulbs or something to leave them on? The answer is no. It's just taking energy away from the bulbs, so eat those scapes.
Yeah, there are some other theories involved here. one of which is leaving the scapes on for some reason may help the garlic last longer, cure well, and last longer, store better. Hmm. I have not seen that particularly because I still have a few. I think I have about 6 or 8 garlic bulbs left from last year, which are starting to get kind of shriveled, but they still have some good flavor. So I don't know that that's necessarily something that is worth saving. I guess it's an experiment that someone could try to make and label them appropriately in your storage. So try some of each, you know, at a month, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now, let's see. I harvest mine last end of June or July, and here it is early June. So I guess that's pretty good. That's 8 months, 9 months. No, it's almost 11 months storage.
Wow.
So pretty darn good for hardneck garlic, but not all of them will do that well.
So that is an interesting experiment, because maybe some people probably want to leave at least a few scapes on kind of as a little readiness thermometer. Do you do that, where you leave scapes on to let it curl and uncurl and curl again?
I do. I mean, I do, and probably just because I think it's cool-looking stuff. And they stick way up above the rest of the plants. So I'll leave on, you know, I've got boxes here that have 150 to 200 plants in each box. So I may leave 4 or 5 or half a dozen of them on there. And part of it is also kind of watching, kind of because there are different shapes and forms of the scapes themselves. That helps confirm to me that these are all, you know, I don't have some odd ones. I guess I should leave them all on there, and then if you see the one or two odd ones, then you know that they got mixed up. But I'm not going to leave that many, partly because there's a really great market for it and partly because I really like to eat them.
Well, right. Both good reasons. And it's an interesting thing to kind of keep track of, to see the difference there. Do the ones where you eat the scapes create larger cloves? And then ultimately, if you can pay attention long enough, see which ones cure better and last longer.
Right. Yep. So anyway, we'll see how that goes. And again, another one that's worth removing as far as flowers for removal, when we're growing zucchinis are easier than cucumbers, which are much smaller flowers. But again, removing the extra male zucchinis, and some of them can be removed even while they are in bloom. Again, they too are edible. They can be stuffed or dipped in a fritter batter or a similar something like that to eat. But removing any of those flower buds immediately after they're done blooming, which includes the females off the ends of the little fruits, removing those flowers so that the fungus doesn't grow in them and then grow into the ends of the zucchinis or the other squash that you might happen to be growing, because that is a really fertile ground, really tender stuff for fungus to grow on, and they will go from the flower into the fruit, the little zucchini.
Wow.
So gently, about 2 days after they blossom, they fold up or fade, usually they will snap off gently, carefully, and get rid of them, throw them in the compost or whatever.
Wow. This is after they've done the work of, you know, pollinating each other. And how do you know when they're ready to get rid of?
Well, you'll just look. So for the males, I mean, the males can be taken off as soon as they fade. And the other thing that happens too, very often, normally, on zucchinis, you will see that the very first few flowers may all be male, and then before the first females come along. So those are the perfect ones to remove for eating or whatever. But then again, once you have both male and female flowers, then they fade. They too are only open for 1 day, like daylilies. And certainly you can help hand pollinate. Take a male flower, just tear the petals off. You've got this fairly substantial brush on the end of a little stem, and you can dab it right on the stigmas of the female flowers to help improve the odds for pollination, and then discard those flowers. And again, even on the end of where you can see the little zucchini forming, that flower will fade, you know, second day, third day. By the third or fourth day, again, you should remove them so that they don't start to grow nasty gray stuff, gray fuzzies on them.
Right. Okay, nice. So this time of year, people potentially, depending on, I suppose, how their garden is growing, they want to be keeping an eye out for those squash blossoms to possibly be helping things along as far as hand pollinating?
Yeah, depending, it kind of depends on where your plants are, whether they're inside a greenhouse or a hoop house. But again, if you're not seeing lots of bees moving around in there, then we can help them out. So, whether you have your doors and windows and vents open so the beneficial critters can come in, that's what we hope for, to do the pollination. And it may be some other smaller insects and flies that we don't necessarily see them all the time. I mean, you kind of see the results if they do get pollinated and you see the little zucchini growing larger and larger. And that has to remind you, don't let them get too large unless you really want to harvest baseball bats and scoop them out and stuff them with something else savory, perhaps.
Right, right. Yeah, okay, good point. I want to float out there to listeners that we are able to take your calls today. If you have any questions here in the last 10 minutes of the show that you are hoping to get in front of Master Gardener Ed Bajarski, if there's anything you've been scratching your head about in your garden this past week, do pounce on the opportunity to ask the question. 772-3808, the number to call. But
And let's kind of move over to another subject that's, again, timely, which is thinning. So, and this can be thinning of our carrots and beets and other vegetables that we might have planted in the garden, giving them the space they need to grow larger vegetables, larger carrots, larger parsnips or turnips or radishes, any of those. Give them room because, again, each one of those takes energy and or fertilizer, and for efficient use to get yourself some nice sized produce of them, it's worth removing them. They can be eaten. All of these, the little carrots, the little beets that you pull out, rinse them off and toss them in your salads. That's perfectly fine. Then the other one is small lettuce plants, or maybe if you direct seeded things like broccoli and cabbage and cauliflower and stuff. Those, you can carefully dig up the in-between plants that are too thick and transplant them out to give you more, a larger bed, or plant a whole another one. One of those, though, talking about fruits, where we have our cherries and apples, maybe if you're lucky enough to have plums or other assorted fruits, the cherries are done. The apples here are just about done in a very few places. So this is a time when I start going around to the trees, and they're small. My trees are small enough yet still. I can shake the tree, and for a couple of reasons. One of the reasons is to shake off the spent blossoms, kind of like we're removing the flowers on the zucchini, the squashes. But I'm trying to shake off the blossoms that did not get pollinated on my trees. So again, I've got less fungus issues there. And then once we can watch and do this, you can do this once a week, really. The other thing, too, that happens that I've noticed is that I'll get some of the click beetles, the adults, that is, which are the adults of the little orange wire worms, which would be in the soil. Anyway, the click beetles, I have seen them feeding in the little flower buds, in the open flowers. So I'm also trying to shake those off, although those do fly, so I guess potentially you could put a tarp or sheets or something underneath the apple tree that you're shaking, or cherry tree, and do a little sampling just to see if there are some of these bugs that you may need to do a little more effort on. And then follow up with a few weeks from now, coming back to these same trees and potentially doing some thinning of the fruit that did get pollinated so that you have fewer but larger fruits. I mean, you're not going to get cherries that are the size of apples, but you should get more and nicer cherries in the process, and certainly should get bigger apples than if you left every one of them on each individual flower cluster.
Nice. Those are two great tips for apple trees and other fruit, too. It never really occurred to me to try to shake off the spent blossom leaves, but yeah, of course, those are going to get attacked right away by fungus and that sort of thing. So you're protecting the overall health of the tree by encouraging those off. If it's not, you know, if we've gone a little while without a nice strong wind coming through, then come on in and help those trees out a bit, hey?
Right, exactly, yeah. Well, as you say, a wind would do it too. But again, we can go and shake individual branches. And again, if you're doing a little bit of pest sampling, you may see, again, if you have a sheet underneath there, you might see some interesting critters come out of those trees. Last summer, late summer, the apples were half size or so. I started seeing some strange stuff happening. They looked like brown patches on the apples. And that would be one way, a place where you might find these critters when they come off the tree. But I ended up noticing I had apples that had a little green inchworm, one inch long. And I mean, I guess that's appropriate. But they would hang on to the apple, and they were literally, you could see them scraping the flesh, scraping through the skin and eating into the flesh of the apple. And they would make patches, brown patches, when the apple flesh oxidized. So caught a couple of them in the act and took their pictures and then squashed them afterwards. But again, that's something if you're looking for, if you've got pests, or you're wondering what kind of pests you may have, that's one way to sample them.
And then once you've taken the picture, you can kind of post it on the trunk of the tree as a warning to the other worms.
Yeah, beware, yeah. Keep out, keep away, yeah.
Yeah.
Thou shalt well be persecuted. Uh-huh. Yes.
Right.
Yeah, it's just interesting the different critters that, I mean, that's one I had never seen before last year. And hard to say which sort of a little moth that it probably, moth or butterfly, it turned into at some point.
Yeah, well, that's classic. I mean, that's a nourishing little habitat for somebody to try to get into. So those are definitely great tips about fruit and apples, and a good reminder that, you know, ultimately less is more when it comes to producing your fruit on those branches. Is the more apples, the smaller they'll be.
Yeah, I mean, we don't usually do this on our raspberries or blackberries or, I mean, like the currants and gooseberries that I'm sitting beside. Those have, you know, they don't get all that large, and assuming that your fertility is good, then they can support all the fruit that they can possibly have. Excuse me. But, yeah, with the apples and others, and it'll be interesting to see, too, because we did have a really great apple crop last year, whether we even have as many apples this year as we did. That is yet to come, but I am... At least it seems like there are fewer flowers on the apple trees this year.
Yeah, I kind of thought so, too. You know, two summers ago, it was so sunny, so last year's apples were, you know, abundant. And then maybe some of that stored energy, I guess, got kind of spent building those apples. But I guess it's too early to really say, I suppose. But
yeah, yes, exactly. I mean, by the time we get to August, or so. I mean, the cherries, by that time, we'll be eating cherries, and the apples should be of a nice size that we can see them and see how well spaced they are. But again, even if there aren't that many, if there are clusters, you talk about the clusters, sometimes you have a cluster of five or six flowers. You generally want to thin on the apples, thin them back to one apple per cluster.
And then
that's assuming that, you know, one of the rules of thumb they say is one apple to 40 leaves. Well, I haven't counted leaves too much to see the proportion there, but that's one way. So that's how many leaves it takes to feed an apple.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, the apple tree is a good instructor for these general principles. Well, okay. I suppose we're kind of coming close to the end of our time here. Is there anything you want to leave people with? Homework in the garden for the week before we sign off?
I'll just mention, this is probably a good time to mention, I think we did when we talked about fertilizer a few weeks back, but still a bit of fertilizing is okay on trees and shrubs, but we want to kind of finish up that fertilizing, and whether we're using tree spikes, granular fertilizer, compost, well, compost can be later, but, you know, quit the fertilizing of most of the trees by the 1st of July. So we don't want to stimulate that late growth. So again, if you're, you know, keep making compost and weed juice and all of that, certainly use that in your more for the vegetables and stuff, which are most of those vegetables are annuals, so they, you just got to keep them going until we harvest them, essentially.
Gotcha. Okay, so that's a good point, that with your trees, you're wanting to get your timing right with fertilizing so that they go dormant at the right time.
Yes, exactly. So then we don't have winter damage. Winter, it's way too early to forecast what kind of a winter we're going to have. I'm still looking forward to a little more heat for this summer. Wouldn't hurt, however.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Agreed. Okay. Well, that's a good thought to leave people with, just kind of planning out their to-do list around fertilizing and side dressing and keeping some fertilizing going on some things and then also tapering off on trees and bushes.
Yep. Okay. Get out there and thinning and deadheading and careful fertilizing.
Perfect. Great. Well, enjoy the next week in the garden, Ed, and we'll do the same, and we'll talk to you again this time next week.
All right. Very good, Oren.
Okay. Thanks so much for making yourself available for all of us. We all learn a lot from these shows, and we just appreciate you down here. Master Gardener Ed Bajarski, thank you so much. And also, thank you to The Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. They have season-end annuals to fill out your garden, and a new shipment of organic black gold, compost perlite, and bales of potting mix in stock down at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing. And they do offer delivery as well, 772-3464.
I forget all about the sweating and digging. Every time I go out and pick me a pig. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Sure, but it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle, put a home.